The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Boston Red Sox survive a bumpy Giolito outing to fortunately win the game 4-1, taking a very important game one against the Blue Jays, raising their win total up to 86, looking over 71 losses. My name is Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Jason Kelly and Doug Acheson, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? You can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, fellas, this one was just very exciting, and the first five innings of this kind of felt like a loss. You know, there were some bad vibes out there. Giolito looked very shaky, but despite his shakiness, he was able to ultimately only give up one run, and that gave us an opportunity to open it up. How do you, though, feel about Giolito going forward? It feels like he hasn't been quite as crisp as of late.
Yeah, it feels like he's pressing a little bit, but I think the whole team is. I think the whole team is pressing a little bit. Everyone's kind of tight right now, so I'm not ultimately too worried about it. I still think when it comes down to it, playoff game, got to have it kind of scenario. Now, is he going to pitch 7-8 shutout innings? No, he might not. He might give up two or three runs, but I still trust Giolito to get the job done, and I think what you saw tonight is he has that capability of battling through. Right. So even if he doesn't have his best stuff, if he's just sort of, you know, a little bit all over the place, he's not going to completely just crap the bed. Right. Like he can at least battle through, keep you in it. And, you know, at the end of the day, give you the innings that you need. Now, you know, today was kind of a different example. The pitch count got high real quick. But again, he kept you in it. So I'm not overly worried. I think that veteran know-how kind of comes in at some point. So I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, it seemed like he had trouble like finding his footing tonight too. Right? It was kind of looked a little weird, but you know, he got big strikeouts when he needed it, and you know, this is one of the best lineups in the league. So you know, you're not just going to keep them off the bases all game. You know, when you're playing teams like Toronto and you're playing teams any team in the playoffs, really, you're going to find yourselves in jams. And you're going to have to get out of it. And he got out of it. He was getting big strikeouts. He got out of it every time. It was good to see, you know, even when he was stumbling a little bit, he was still, you know, grinding down when he needed to, getting the big outs. And that's what you got. That's what you love to see against a good team like this.
Yeah, the four walks, I think, is the most concerning thing to me. But the fact that he was able to limit the hits down to three, of course, Trevor Story's defense was a little all over the place tonight. He was charged with two errors, although one maybe I think he shares the blame with Romy on that one. It wasn't a very great toss by Romy to him. But then towards the end of the game, Story started making some pretty good plays. So, you know, it was nice to see him settle down. Ultimately, when it comes to the pitcher, you know, defense matters. And this defense is able to limit damage to a certain extent. even tonight when, you know, it potentially could have gone the other way, you know, and uh-oh, a big error here. Is this where the home run comes in? Fortunately, it wasn't the case tonight. No long ball given up by the Red Sox, which is awesome. And, you know, the bullpen was there to settle down. In particular, Justin Wilson, actually, who I would like to really give a lot of kudos to, because I have personally lost a lot of faith in him over the last month. And seeing him go out there and not just get the last out of the fifth inning, but also come out for an entire inning after that, which I thought, I was like, uh-oh, this is going to go wrong. It didn't. And he set the stage perfectly for that Whitlock, Slayton, Chapman shutdown, which is kind of exactly how we drew it up on opening day, funnily enough.
That's two in a row for Slayton now. That's good outings. He's starting to maybe get it together. That'd be huge for us.
Yeah, and I think with Wilson, they're still looking for that bridge to the, you know, the Whitlock, Chapman, that part of your bullpen, even Slayton now. You know, as you guys mentioned, that's another good outing for him. So I trust Slayton, or excuse me, I trust Wilson more than I trust Greg Weissert at this point. So I think we all pretty much agree on that. So yeah, it was good to see from Wilson. And again, like, veteran guy, has been there, done that. So, you know, he knows what his job is, and he knows how important this game is and what's at stake. As far as the story defense, yeah, you're right. It was kind of Jekyll and Hyde, right? He made that awesome play late in the game where it's just, I didn't think he'd get the throw there. I mean, it was unbelievable. Throw across his body like that. First error was obviously on him, and he's done that lately. Like, there's been a lot of throws that he's been dirting. And, you know, look, Nate Lowe is okay defensively. I mean, he's actually better than okay, but those are hard. It's hard when you're consistently getting throws in the dirt like that for your first baseman. The second one, I'm surprised he got charged with the error there. That's on Romy. You got to go to first base with that. And he sort of looked unsure, I think, because it was a high hop and Giolito reached for it. He'd stayed back on it way too much. Like, he's got to charge a little bit more there and go to first. Like, Jimenez has really good speed. He was going in to second base, you know, guns a-blazing. You got to go to first base with that ball. So I don't put that one on Story. I put that on Romy more. But yeah, just kind of all over the place with Trevor. So that's something to keep an eye on, because look, we've known about the arm problems for a while, right? That his arm strength is starting to fade at this point in his career. That's why they toyed around putting him at second base. You know, is the fatigue catching up? These guys have played a lot of baseball, and, you know, they'll get a little bit of time if they do make the playoffs. They'll get a couple days off here and there, but, you know, they're still going to have to keep grinding. So keep an eye on Trevor's Story there at short. He might be feeling the fatigue a little bit.
That first error was definitely, he threw it in the dirt. But the very next inning, Vladdy made the exact same play. You know what I mean? So it's like, I wouldn't say that was 100% Story. Like, Lowe could have had that. But, definitely the error goes to Story is a bad throw. But it was funny just to see the very next half inning, Vladdy made the exact same play.
Yeah, this was a really weird game, I think, defensively speaking, and even just from an umping point of view, right? This was not a well-umped game, I wouldn't say. Defensively, there was that hilarious throw where, you know, the broadcasters were talking about, oh, that's what speed does. Yoshida has these wheels, and for some reason, you know, the Blue Jays catcher, he just gets up, Kirk does, and throws it to first, tries to pick him off, and just sails it right past the first baseman. And Yoshida was able to get to second base off of that. That was a very strange decision. And the Red Sox, fortunately, were sort of able to capitalize, whereas the Blue Jays weren't. You know, going back to that second inning, I made a mental note where Giolito had the bases loaded, right? And I pulled up the exact sequence of events just to remind myself. It was the leadoff ground out, followed by a walk, a strikeout, a walk. And then you had that fielder's choice where the bases suddenly are loaded because of Story's error, which, like you said, is probably more on Romy. George Springer was up to bat, and this dude is having a career year. And that strikeout call, called looking, I do not believe was a strike. Springer certainly didn't think it was a strike. And he was at a serious risk of getting tossed from the game right at that moment.
And that's where I put that on Giolito being a veteran and kind of knowing the situation there. Because, look, the replays show that ball was foul. It was close. It was very close. I saw why Springer thought he had a double there. But It was foul. But Giolito knew, it's like, this guy's losing his mind over a foul ball right now. Like, he's all out of sorts. Like, he's climbing in the box still, like, heavy breathing because he's so pissed. Like, I'm going to throw a slider right on the edge because he's not going to want to swing at that. He's going to want the perfect pitch. So I'm going to throw it right on the edge. And with this umpiring crew, he might just call it a strike and I might get out of this. Let's see. And he did. And it's just, it was perfect. Like, I think Giolito knew, like, okay, Springer's kind of losing his mind at the umps. They might be wanting a reason to, you know, ring him up and send him to the dugout, you know, even more pissed off. So let me put one right on the edge, just close enough that it could be a strike, but not too close that he'll want to swing at it. So I put that, I give Giolito credit for that. That was a smart way to handle that. He knew Springer was out of his mind and that the umpires were working against him a little bit, and he went for it.
Definitely great pitch. Great pitch. Just great look. You know, it's a great location.
Yeah. And then later in the game, I mean, I was just talking to Doug actually before he joined, Jason, how the big moment that I was so surprised didn't change things for the worse was that horrible out that was called on Sedan Rafaela, picked off at third base, caught in a rundown, and he was called out initially, which I personally thought he looked safe. Doug said the same thing. And certainly on replay, I went, oh, that's safe. There's no doubt that's safe. I do not know how or what the booth was looking at to give the ump that call in his ear that says, no, you were right, call him out. And thankfully, it didn't end up mattering. But little moments like that throughout this entire game just gave it a very uneasy type of vibe for me.
Yeah, 100%. And another Rafaela moment kind of similar to that was the Springer fly ball to center that he almost looked like he had a bead on it, but he couldn't quite come up with it. Luckily, the runner held at third when he delivered it in. But I looked at that, I was like, if someone comes up and hits like a 3-run homer here, you know, we're going to be looking at it going, man, Rafaela makes that catch 9 times out of 10. And the one game he doesn't, it costs us. Luckily, it didn't. And, you know, that play at third base, once again, it's like, yeah, I agree. I think he looked safe to me on the way back. But can you stop getting caught in rundowns, Sadon? Like, how many times is this guy going to just get caught on the base pass? He does it way too much. So, yeah, I thought he was safe too. But at the time, I was going, Sadon, you idiot. Like, in a game like this, seriously, where literally everything's kind of on the line here, and you're going to make another dumb mistake like that? So, luckily, it didn't cost him. I agree with you guys, though. He looked safe to me. Good thing it didn't matter. But yeah, there were a lot of moments like that. This game was kind of slow moving. Pitchers, I guess, duel, if you want to call it that, early on. And yeah, when you see plays like that, you go, oh God, here we go. Here comes the boning, right? It's just, here's how it starts. And luckily, they somehow managed to avoid it. So, you know what? I'll take it because you only got 5 more of these puppies now. So take the win any way you can get it. Hang on to that wild card spot and let the chips fall where they do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. And who needed a hit at such a big moment more than Carlos Narvaez? You know, I said it probably a month ago, right? That if we were going to make the playoffs and make a deep run, you need those unlikely heroes to step up. Tonight, the only starters without a hit were Bregman and Duran. Everyone else contributed to this win. Carlos Narvaez, absolutely massive double to really break the game open. Nate Lowe with a fantastic game, which is very reassuring given his current struggle or recent struggles, I should say. And to get to a pitcher like Gausman, I mean, you've got to do something right. You can't wait for that guy to make a mistake. You've got to be aggressive. This team had a good approach. And fortunately, even though, you know, one little caveat I'll add to that, we probably could have scored more if you look at simply the number of runners in scoring position. I believe by the 6th inning, after it had ended, I believe we had 13 opportunities. And we did get a hit in 4 of them, but like part of me is like, oh man, I want to be greedy with it. Run up that run differential, save Chapman, just make this a blowout. But at the end of the day, a 3-run inning is enough to win the game, thankfully. And it was just very encouraging to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Sunday night when me and Charlie were previewing the series, you know, he was saying, well, what do you think of this game? You know, this guy's pitching this game. And I told him, like, you know, I'm really not worried about the pitching. The pitching isn't really what I'm looking at in these matchups. Can we hit is the only thing that I'm worried about. Can we hit, because we've been getting hits. You know, that's why we leave so many guys in scoring position, because we do hit the ball. We just got to drive them in. We got to get the big hit that actually matters. The hits with two outs, not hitting at the double plays when we're getting guys on. You know, if we can do that, we can get runs across. We saw tonight, even four runs. You know, we have good staff and we have good pitching. You know, if you can get to that 4, 5, 6 level, then that's when I feel really good about our team and our chances.
Yeah, you don't have, you know, kind of the problem that Toronto has with their bullpen, where they feel like they've got to be up 9 runs going into the 7th, 8th inning.
Yeah.
You don't have that problem. You've got one of the best, you know, 3-headed monsters in your bullpen now that Slayton's back. You know, that bridge that we talked about. And your starting pitching has been pretty good all year. Has it been great in September? No. Bayo's taken a step back. Giolito has taken a step back. Crochet's been okay. And now you're relying on two very young guys to fill in the back end of your rotation. But for the most part, all year, it's been good. It's that runners in scoring position. Those four letters have been the biggest bugaboo for this Red Sox team this year, because as Doug mentioned, they can get on base. They get their hits, they get on base, and they threaten. It's just they never score enough, you know? And look, tonight, you got the four runs you needed. You got them late, but you got them. And, you know, you're right. Like, 4 or 5 runs, that's all this pitching staff needs. You don't have to be up by 10, right? It's, you know, unless Greg Weissert's in there. But otherwise, you're fine. Like, you feel okay. If Jordan Hicks and Greg Weissert aren't on the mound, you don't need a ton of runs. Just get 4 or 5 and take advantage of your opportunities. The rest will figure itself out. So they did that tonight. They got to do it for the next 5 games. And then we'll see what happens when, you know, we flip to October.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they were able to limit the damage that this Blue Jays offense can inflict. And these poor teams that the Blue Jays have faced have been getting shelled for months. I mean, this offense is feisty. It's deep. It's got power. It's got patience. It's fun to watch, you know, except for when you're going up against it, at which point you're, you know, on the edge of your seat every time. 5 walks for the Blue Jays tonight, but only 3 hits. And I feel like that was a really big, big thing to do is you sort of give them their passes. Obviously, Gio struggled a little bit in that regard, maybe gave a few too many. But being able to limit those hits, like I said earlier, whether it's by defense or whether it's just by good pitching, inducing pop-ups and whatnot, I mean, that is crucial. We may not be in a position to win the division. We may not even be in a position to win the first wild card at this point. But to do damage against a Blue Jays team that is trying, that I think is the most important part, because the Yankees could catch them. We just saw a division winner who early on in the season I called as a juggernaut in the American League, and then there was everyone else. We just saw them fall out of their division hold. It's the Tigers. They got beat up by the Guardians. The Guardians usurped their throne, and the Tigers went all the way from a division winner to the 3rd wild card, where now they're fighting with Houston for it, who is yet to play tonight.
Yeah, and to your point, Yankees won tonight. They walked it off.
You know, and they're one game.
One game out. Right. Like, Toronto can't afford to lose these games. I mean, they're probably panicking the same way the Tigers are, going, what happened to our division lead that was, you know, pretty much sewed up a couple weeks ago? So, yeah, it's, you know, it's two teams that have a lot to play for. And in a way, more of the pressure's on Toronto, because they don't want to lose that division lead. They don't want to be playing wild card games. They wanted a bye. Now they're not going to get that. So it was huge. And look, one thing you did tonight that really helped you, you mentioned they only had 3 hits. Vlad Guerrero was quiet. You kept him quiet. You kept Addison Barger quiet. George Springer probably thinks he should have had 2 hits, but he didn't. So if you can just keep those guys quiet and just, you know, deal with the rest of the lineup that you can probably pitch to a little bit better, then you can have success. And they showed that tonight.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I think we were talking about it in the war room like the other day, Nick. It's like, if we weren't maybe right in the mix of it, we'd be maybe a little bit more excited of how exciting the end of this season is going with all these races. But it's kind of hard to focus on that when you're in the middle of it. But it's exciting last week of the season. It could really, I mean, we could still, you know, if we make the playoffs, our opponent could be any of four teams right now. You know, it's really crazy. This last week is everything's going to be shuffled. You could fall from a division lead to out of the playoffs completely. You know, it's really going to be crazy. And it's like, I don't even know if we get one of these spots, I'm not even sure who I would rather play at this point. You know, Cleveland is on fire, you know, and Detroit is free falling. Detroit might be the answer. I don't know.
I agree. In fact, maybe we're catching Detroit at a really good time at the end of the year. I mean, they have been just terrible, 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 terrible. And it is a shame because, I mean, right now, you look at the seven teams, it's pretty easy to make an argument that all seven teams deserve a nod here, you know, either for their success earlier in the season or their success just really in the last month. The Blue Jays and the Yankees are the only two teams right now, until this updates maybe after tonight, that, you know, have a clinched playoff berth, you know, and that's accounting for the updated scores from, you know, all the games that have been played up until this point. It's just, you know, how's Houston going to look? How's whatnot? But Houston right now is half a game out, you know, assuming if they win tonight, they'll be tied with the Tigers for that third wild card spot. Yeah. But someone is going to miss this. And that really is such a shame. And you're sort of seeing something similar over in the National League, where the Reds have been putting up a really good performance as the Mets have been spiraling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, you're looking over there, though. There's five teams that have clinched. It's only that final wild card that's up for grabs, whereas the AL is just wide open, and we have no idea what the actual playoff picture is going to look like. Out of these seven teams, there's a lot of possible configurations.
I mean, we're into tiebreaker territory here. Like, we're going to be talking about tiebreakers on game 162 and scoreboard watching and kind of looking at, okay, Cleveland's winning, but we don't have the tiebreaker against them. But, or if, you know, if it's Houston's winning or Detroit, but we got the tiebreaker with them, so that's okay. We don't mind. Like, it really is going to become a frenzy. And this is why it's just, yeah, take it one game at a time, because you're not one of these teams on the outside looking in, right? Where, or you're not one of these teams that you're worried about losing your division lead. You've got a solid number two wildcard spot that you've been hanging on to for a while. Just don't F it up. And tonight was the first step towards not effing it up. You got six games left. You won the first one. Great. I went into this week thinking 4-2. If you can go 4-2, maybe even 3-3, you're okay. You're probably going to hang on. You'll make it in. Maybe you drop to the third wild card, but you're still in. If they go 2-4, we're talking trouble. Then you're probably getting usurped by a Cleveland or a Houston or something like that. So you took game one, and now you got to go back tomorrow. Do the same thing. Take it inning by inning, at bat by at bat. Like, because it's just, there's too much chaos right now. Like, in terms of, like I mentioned, tiebreakers and who's this many games back and who's playing who. Like, it's very chaotic right now. So for the Red Sox, they just got to focus on who's in front of them. And who's in front of them is a team that, if you want to go far anyway in the playoffs, you're going to have to beat. You got to beat teams like this if you want to have any sort of a run. So tonight was a good start. You went up against one of their best. And, you know, you had one of your best on the mound too. But as I said, September hasn't been the best month for him. But he battled for you. Not a great start. Not his best start. You know, a little bit wonky. But he battled for you. And then you got the runs late. So if they can suddenly become a team that just battles and gets, you know, has clutch and late in their genes, that's going to help them a lot.
Yeah, we really need Detroit to win these next two games. So we can, because we have the tiebreaker over Cleveland, not over them. So we really, you know, it'd be really big, because that one game lead is more like a two game lead when it's Cleveland, but it's only a one game lead when it's Detroit. So be really big for them to win those two games coming in, because, you know, we're hoping to take at least two out of three from them, right? So it's down to the wire. Since the last time, for the first time in a while, it's been, you know, down to the wire, really down last games type of stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, one other thing that I noticed, there's a funny little thing when it comes to a tale of numbers, right, and a tale of records. If you look at all of our win-losses in the splits, right, pages, you'll see that first off, this win helped us shake off a little bit of that earlier season bad mojo that Toronto was giving us. This is a team that's beaten us up pretty badly all season long. You know, coming into this game, we had only scored one run less than them. It was 44-45, and yet we were 3-7 in those 10 games. So to come out today with a 4-1 win actually gives us a positive run differential versus them, funnily enough, a 4-7 record, which is a little more acceptable. It also boosts us to a winning record in September, 10-9, and a winning record on the road. This was our 40th win on the road to 39 losses. So a lot of narratives, I think, being challenged there by this Sox team that not unfair narratives either. Toronto beating us. Are we falling apart in September? We can't win on the road. Tonight, we managed to beat all three of those. Hopefully, we can keep doing that.
Yeah, and you're going to have to do it with the squad you have, right? It's not like there's a reinforcement coming. You know, I mean, Abreu was it. Abreu was the last reinforcement that you have coming off the injured list. Roman Anthony's not going to be healthy enough by the time, you know, unfortunately, right? So, you know, you got to do it with this squad. And look at what's happened with Houston. They just lost Yordan again. Like, they were just getting hot. They got him back, and then, boom, crossing home plate, hurts his ankle, and they're fighting for their lives. So you've got a pretty healthy roster, and, yeah, it's not the best. We're missing some key guys, Anthony being the biggest one. But you mentioned the pitching staff earlier. You've still got a really good pitching staff. You know, your front three, at least, should be really good. If Brian Bayo can get back on track here, then, you know, you're pretty much set. And yeah, the young kids, like, it's going to be up and down with them, but just keep them in it, get to that bullpen, which I think for the most part has stabilized. You know, there's a few guys that go up and down, but we feel pretty good about that back end. So, and it's going to take nights like this where you're getting contributions from Masataki Yoshida, who we all want to jettison off this roster as fast as we can, but tonight you needed him. He was good tonight. You know, Nate Lowe, who we liked at the time, but has really been struggling. We're kind of going, oh boy, now we can see why he was put on the waiver wire. Well, he comes back tonight, has a big game himself. So it's going to be like that. That's the kind of team they are. It's one night, it's Masataki Yoshida and Nate Lowe. Tomorrow, Jaron Duran might go 4-for-5, or, you know, and might almost hit for the cycle. Like, it's just, it's never consistently one guy, which is frustrating, but it's just everyone at some point steps up, right? And then obviously you hope that you don't have that one game where no one steps up and it's a stinker. But if they can just do that, you know, whatever, who cares who it is? Just someone has a big game here and there, score a couple runs, and the pitching staff nails it down. No reason why they should fall out of this.
Yeah, it was tough to see Bregman go 0 for tonight, because it looked like he was getting something going against Tampa there. It looked like he was, you know, finally getting some hits and getting some hard contact, but you know, us. It was tough for him to go over again, but hopefully, you know, he's, you know, if he's going to stay in that three spot like that, which seemed to help him against Tampa, but it'd be huge. We really, really need him. If he can really get going against this series, you know, I'll feel pretty good about keeping our spot.
Yeah, it's funny with Yoshida. There's a lot of bad news for Yoshi haters. And, you know, I wouldn't call myself a Yoshi hater, but I was in the camp that was like, this dude doesn't belong on the playoff roster. He's kind of playing himself into a part where maybe he does. You know, funnily enough, I looked just at his recent numbers. Over the last 7 games, he's actually batting .407. Last 15 games, he's slashing .327, .339, .404. A serious lack of walks in that time span, which is something that has kind of been a weird thing to notice about him all season long. It feels like the walks have been down, but he's gotten hot at the right time. And that's really what we're banking on. Like you said, Jason, there's not one guy on this team anymore that you can count on. Not even Bregman, not even Duran. Out of the 9 guys that are being rolled out, someone has to show up. And you hope that it's more that are hot than are cold, more guys who are ready to hit tonight and have some heroics like tonight's game versus, you know, what we've seen pretty recently, which is the possibility, of course, that all nine hitters show up and one guy gets a hit and then everyone else disappears. But for right now, I mean, going up against a pretty decent pitching staff, especially as far as the starting rotation is concerned, it's a good test for us. And it's very much a playoff preview, very literally. I mean, both of these teams we should see or could see, I guess, in the playoffs in Detroit's case. But to see Willie come back, get a nice double, Narvaez, Yoshi, I mean, getting those extra base hits, legging stuff out, tonight, that is what they need to do. So, I mean, this team, if there are two words of advice that I could give to them, it would just be lock in.
Yeah, absolutely. Start wearing the t-shirts again. I don't care. T-shirt doesn't affect. I know people got pissed about it when they went on that losing streak. Wear the tremendously locked in t-shirts all week. I don't care. If that's what gets them to actually do it, like you said, fine by me. Like that's because you're right. Like that's what they're going to have to do. You got five games left. No mistakes. Can't have any mistakes. You got to play your best here. And one other note on Yoshida. It's interesting because I'm not a Yoshi hater either. I was actually like kind of excited about him when they signed him. I thought, well, the contract's a little high, but okay. He's a guy who, you know, makes a lot of contact, gets on base and doesn't strike out. All right. That's pretty cool. I'm realizing now it's like, okay, so he doesn't field at all. He doesn't run very well, although other teams seem to think that he does because they're always trying to pick him off. Like, I don't know. I mean, I know he's perfect on stolen bases in his career, but he's only done it like 10 times. So to me, I don't think he runs very well. He doesn't walk and he doesn't hit for power. So I'm like, huh, there's another player in the league who's like that, who's won three batting titles. It's like Yoshida's Timu Luis Arraez. Like, it's you. I wish he was Luis Arraez because he'd be hitting 325 right now and getting on base every game. But that's what he is. So it's kind of weird. Like, if he could just make contact more regularly and actually like hit the ball in, you know, into the outfield instead of chopping it to second base, he'd just be the outfield version of Luis Arraez. Which that's not the worst thing. I know a lot of analytics people hate Luis Arraez. They think he's like the worst player in baseball because, you know, his stupid baseball savant page is all blue. So, you know, he must automatically suck. Guy's won three batting titles. But like, if he could just be that, he'd be fine. It's just, he shows glimpses. And like you said, those stats over the last seven games and last 15, like that's more what I expected when he got here. So look, if that means he's getting hot now and he's going to carry that into the postseason, fine. I'm all for it. I feel like we've been down this road before with Yoshida where it's like, oh, here he comes. That's the Yoshi we know. And then he'll go over 16 the final couple of games. So who knows?
Yeah, we've talked about the resiliency of this team. You know, it feels like this team's just like the Undertaker. You know, they're just lying down on the mat and then boom, they just sit up, you know, when you least expect it. And they did it again tonight, you know. And that's why I've kind of always felt like we were never – well, never, but that's kind of how I've always kept the faith that we're going to keep one of these spots and we're not going to fall out all the way. Because it just seems like all season long, every time that we're dead, they find a way to win and put a couple wins together. And, you know, they're a resilient team and they seem like a pretty close group, you know. And I think the locker room is, it helps in times like this. You know, when you really need to grind down and get a win, and everyone seems to be together about that.
Most definitely. You know, you're right about resilience really being the name of this season, where we have gone back and forth so much. You know, we have seen some tremendously high highs and tremendously low lows. And I'm not just talking about Nathaniel. I mean, this is the season that will be remembered as the last stand for Devers. This is the season where Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer's debuts were cut short by injury. It's a tough, tough way to go about it. But you look at Crochet's debut as a Boston Red Sox, and even if it doesn't end great, which obviously we're all hoping it ends well, but even if, you know, his last start here is bumpy or whatever, it's been a tremendous start to something. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. The young kids are here. They're looking pretty good. We look to have a lot of pitching depth options. I was just speaking with a friend in the car the other day, And I was listing about a potential 2026 rotation for us. And I said, and who even knows? I mean, I wouldn't put Hauk back in the rotation. And he says, yeah, I actually forgot Hauk was even on the team. Like, that's how many options we've developed for our starting pitcher suddenly, you know?
He was our ace last year.
Exactly. Is this dude, oh, yeah. Like, not even, oh, yeah, I want him to come back and be, like, in a relief role. No, I completely forgot he existed, you know, my friend says. That is how spoiled we are in terms of sudden emergence of certain prospects, whether it's Harrison, Tolley, Early, Dobbins, take your pick, Cutter Crawford, Sandoval coming back, blah, blah, blah. We are in a great position for 2026. I really do believe that, so long as we have a good offseason. But God, would it feel like such a waste to stumble? Because at times this team, I mean, we have a 108 run differential. You've got to go out there and prove yourselves.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why, like, it sounds harsh, but if they drop out of it here and they miss the playoffs, I'm not saying the season was a success. Like, yeah, there are some good things you can highlight, right? Crochet, as you mentioned, is a good one. You can talk about the young pitching, Early and Tolley. These guys coming up. Anthony, we know, is going to be a star when he's healthy. You still failed. It's still a failure of a season. If they drop out of this, because at the end of the day, in the final week of the season, you had the second wild card in your hands. And so if they fall out of it, it's because they screwed it up. They screwed it up in September by playing bad baseball through most of the month, and they lost it in the final week. That's a failure. I don't want to hear, here's what I don't want to hear after this year. Well, it was a development year anyway, so who cares? It doesn't matter if they miss. No. This is not a development year. Look, just because you traded Rafael Devers does not mean that you tanked. You still went out and, you know, bought at the deadline. You got two crappy pitchers, but it was not a complete sell job. They went for the playoffs. So if they drop out of it here, failure, sorry. And we can parse out which, you know, slices of the blame pie later on. Hopefully we don't have to do that next week. But if we do, you can say Breslow, Cora, the players, like, you know, take your pick. But no, don't give them the benefit of the doubt if they drop out of it here. They should be in the playoffs next week. And if they're not, failure.
100%, especially because, like, we need to get these guys playoff experience. You know, no one on the team except for Bregman and Lowe have any. And even for Roman and Meyer, even if they're not playing, they're in the clubhouse. You know, they're in the dugout. It's, you're still experiencing the crowds, you know, the media, the heightened everything. You'll still feel it. And I think it's very, very important for this team to finally get over that hump and, you know, and make it. You know, we've been rebuilding, and, you know, you gotta get over that hump. You gotta make the playoffs. You gotta get these kids experience. You gotta give them some confidence. You know, no matter how the series goes that you get in, getting in, even if you lose the wild card round, getting in is, I think, very important for this team going forward.
Yeah, you guys are absolutely correct. You know, Jason, just to respond to what you said, I mean, we cannot allow people to rewrite history. Coming into this season, we were projected to be division winners. I mean, people were saying the Red Sox in 2025, this was going to be a 90-win team, which in theory it still could be. But, you know, we were shooting for not just 90, but 95. You know, oh, we're going to beat the Yankees. No one was even talking about the Blue Jays, not even 2 months into the season. You know, we can't let people off the hook. This is not going to get big brothered into a development year. It can't. This was a year where we were supposed to be World Series champions. We were supposed to at least be ALCS favorites. And somehow along the way, due to, like you said, we can parse out blame, whether you can attribute it to Devers being alienated in the offseason, whether you can attribute it to the decision not to call Roman Anthony up earlier, maybe, even by a few weeks, you know, there's going to, or Christian Campbell, for example, maybe he shouldn't have started on opening day. There's going to be a lot of speculation about stuff like that, that can all be resolved or at least cushioned by just a good divisional series.
Yeah. I mean, just get in and see what happens. And at that point, it really is one game at a time. So you can mix and match your pitching matchups. You know, the lineup can change based on, you know, if you have success against a certain guy that you haven't seen in a while, like it all changes once you get in. At that point, really, it is just game by game. It's not just, well, you know, this series and this series next. Like, no, take it game by game, see how far you get. I agree. Like, this team gets in and they make it to the ALDS, and let's say they lose. Okay, maybe they will. But if they put up a strong performance and they're, you know, they're fighting, and you kind of look at it and you go, okay, there's the outline for the future, right? And you're going to be probably without Roman Anthony all through the playoffs. So think about adding him back in. Think about adding in Marcelo Meyer. Think about adding potentially Christian Campbell, who probably should have been called up these last couple of weeks because he was red hot towards the end of Worcester season. But whatever, we don't need bats, right? But think of him as potentially being your starting second baseman next year. Then the outlook looks a lot brighter, because then you look at it and, you know, you go into 2027, 2026, 2027, you say, okay, now we can firmly believe that, yeah, they can win their division. They can go to the ALCS, maybe even the World Series. So it just, I don't want fans to just be like, oh, it's okay, they missed the playoffs. It's fine. Development year. Like, because you can't go from that to, you know, spring of 26 saying, oh, they're going to win the World Series this year. Like, no. That's fraudulent. That's just, you don't really believe that. You're just doing that for positivity clicks. At the end of the day, it's okay to say, if they drop out of this, it's a failure. And then you turn the page, and in 2026, you say, that can't happen again. You absolutely have to make the playoffs in 26. Otherwise, then heads start rolling. So, like, I think if they drop out this year, I don't know if anyone gets fired. I don't think Cora gets fired. I don't think Breslow gets fired. But it happens again next year when all these guys are a year older and you have a chance to add again. Oof. Then you're looking at a disaster. So, yeah, don't let them start doing that trend this year. Get in, stay in for a little bit and fight. See what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the vibes are a lot different from, like, if we miss the playoffs and it's, all right, next year we need Roman back, we need Marcelo back, we need Campbell back. You know, instead of getting to the ALDS maybe and losing and being like, all right, well, now we add Campbell, now we add Roman next year. Now it's just a whole different vibe of how you're looking at the team.
Yeah, it's, you know, you can say it's glass half full, glass half empty type of thing, but it's very true. One thing that I definitely don't want to see is, funnily enough, it's the same thing that I said I'm sick of seeing at deadlines, which is the idea that, oh, well, the injuries are essentially like adding free agents. You know, look at how much healthier we're going to get at the start of next year. I do want to see us add to this team. I think everyone
have to,
because this roster, we are at the end of a rebuild, and hopefully it can be ruled a success. You have all of these great pitching options. You have a lot of great young hitters that have suddenly emerged. I saw someone up here. Yeah, right here. George White, for example, says something very true. We still need a number two pitcher. Tolle, Harrison, Early are all unproven in a full year, so adding pitching is key. Not sure what Sandoval, Cutter, Fitz, Dobbins, Criswell will give us. That's absolutely correct. And, you know, it's funny because you look at the depth that we have in the rotation, and it's like, oh, well, we could make like two rotations. This is great. But there's a difference between a regular season rotation and a playoff rotation. I agree. I want another number two. And before we get into anything, I would just like to say that one of my candidates, funnily enough, is lowering his stock tremendously. Framber Valdez has been a big part of the Astros losing out on their division lead. Looks like they probably won't gain that back. The Mariners are three games up tonight, so even if the Astros win, you know, that's a pretty sizable lead for the end of the season here. Framber's just been awful for like his last nine starts, you know? So I don't know a name necessarily. It might be too early to throw out, but whether it's going to be a Joe Ryan trade, you know, similar in the Crochet vein, or maybe a Max Fried style signing to a guy like Ranger Suarez, you know, but adding to this team, both in bats and depth and in the rotation, I think that's going to be crucial.
Yeah. Vital to get we really need a big, big power bat. You know, I can't remember the last time, you know, the Red Sox have gone this long without a guy in the middle of their lineup that can get you 30. And that's only 30. You know, we need a guy that can get 35. And we really need that in this lineup. It would really, you know, all those guys that are getting on that we're not driving in, You know, we need that big bat in the middle of the lineup that's going to drive these guys at the top of the lineup that are getting on base. We need home runs. We need RBIs. We need a big bat in this lineup. It's vital.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I don't think this free agent class is the strongest, but it's also not the weakest. I've seen some people say that it's, like, a bad free agent class. I disagree. I mean, especially if Bregman does opt out and join it, which it sounds like he will. I mean, I don't know if you want to re-pursue him if he opts out. Frankly, I have some questions about him. But Eugenio Suarez is going to be out there. He's a power bat. You want 35 home runs added to your lineup instantly? Go sign Eugenio Suarez. Yep. He can bring it to you. Especially if you lose out on Bregman, you go, fine, who cares? I'll get Suarez. He'll hit 35 bombs for me. And, you know, you can go mess up your calf and, you know, only play half the season and then complain about your contract with someone else. You know,
yeah, he should be number one on the list, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And then number two starter, you've got options there. Nick mentioned Ranger Suarez. Framber Valdez, another good one. I mean, he might try and take out a few of your catchers throughout the year, but, you know, when he's pitching well, he won't try and do that. Dylan Cease will be out there. You know, you didn't trade for him, but you can now go sign him if you want to. You know, if you want to, Zach Gallen will be out there. I'm not sure he'd be top of my list, but he's not a terrible option. And, yeah, there's always trades. You can re-explore the Joe Ryan trade if you want to, right? Maybe in the offseason you have a little deeper conversations with Minnesota. Maybe you finally work something out. And you've showed off a little bit more of your young farm system here late in the year. So maybe Minnesota wants to reconnect and say, like, hey, actually, that Connelly early, we're actually interested in him. Like, what about him as a centerpiece? And, you know, whether you want to do that or not, you can make that decision later. But there's options. For number two starters, absolutely. So that's a no-brainer, and I would love the power bat. We'll see what happens with Bregman, but if he wants to opt out, go get me Eugenio Suarez. That's 30, 35 home runs in your lineup instantly. You pair him with a healthy Roman Anthony. You see what you get from Tristan Casas. Like, I don't know, if he finally stays healthy and figures it out, maybe. But, yeah, there's options in free agency. So no matter what happens this final week, if they make it in, they go on a good run, they make it to the ALDS, no matter what, you have to add in the offseason. There's too many options for you to just sit on your hands. So go add that number two starter, go add that power bat, and you'll be in really good shape heading into 26.
Yeah, no excuses.
Yeah. Yeah. Eugenio was one of those guys that was on the front of my wish list. You know, it was him and Merrill Kelly, I think. And you can imagine what this team would be like with those two. It's funny because he got off Suarez did to a fairly cold start in Seattle. And even now it's like one of those funny things with baseball where, like, situational versus big picture thing. His OPS plus over in Seattle is 98, you know, so he's been a slightly below average bat according to this. But I mean, 11 home runs in 47 games, 26 RBI, he's slugging. And, you know, it's hard to say that Seattle's huge, huge resurgence as a team isn't down to not just him, but the other parts that they added. And I think that that goes to show once again why deadlines are so important.
100%. And, you know, they added Josh Naylor too, right? And we were talking with them about trading Tristan Casas to them. And, you know, all the reports of, oh, Casas for Brian Wu. And they're like, no. Because, you know, and the report at the time was that we were trying to shove Yoshida onto them too. But yeah, they clearly made their choice. I wouldn't be surprised if they re-sign Naylor in the offseason and they say, that's our first baseman. Like, that's that problem solved. He's going to be 30, I think. Maybe not even. He might still be under 30. So sign him to a 6-year deal. And there you go. That's one of your Casas trade partners that's gone out the window. So, and don't ignore first base. I'm not saying you have to go pay through the nose for a Josh Naylor, but look, I said it going into last year. They need a first baseman. You cannot trust Tristan Casas to play a full season. And everyone said, oh, no, you got Casas. He'll be fine. Like, this is going to be his breakout year. No, no. Bust his leg going down the first baseline. Who knows what it'll be next year? Who knows what he'll look like after this injury? I know Nathaniel Lowe has an arbitration year left in him. If you want to go that route, you can. I'd like to do a little bit better than Nate Lowe. You know, at this stage of his career, I think there are better options out there. So, you know, maybe just explore the first base market as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. You know, before we go into the probable matchup for tomorrow, I would just like to share a little bit of schadenfreude, I guess, where, you know, just a little bit of misery loves company thing where, you know, obviously when we're so focused in on the Red Sox stuff, it's so easy to not necessarily know what fans of other teams are going through, what they're saying, whatnot. And so three teams that are in a very similar situation to us, honestly, you could probably say a slightly worse situation than us. You can look at the Houston Astros, who, despite having a very good start to the year, they actually went 19-7 in June. They have not yet had a winning month since then. 12-13 July, 13-15 August, and a 9-10 September while they're playing the A's right now. You look at the New York Mets, who have been having yet another historic collapse. Again, started the season 21-10, an 11-17 August, a 7-12 September, looking over their shoulders at the Reds, who might leapfrog them. And no matter how much money they spend, it seems like the Mets always have these same collapses, which is a complaint echoed by Red Sox fans, funnily enough. And then finally, the Detroit Tigers, who, I mean, what else can be said? A juggernaut of a team, an 18-9 April, a 19-9 May. They are currently 5-14 in September, and they have lost their division lead and very well may lose their playoff spot altogether. So, you know, it's like you said, Doug, before we were talking in the war room, this would be such an exciting finish if you're not involved in it. I can guarantee you that fans of our four teams here are not having as much fun watching this race as general baseball fans are.
100%.
But yeah, so when it comes to the probable pitching matchup for Wednesday, the 24th, we have a 7:07 p.m. EDT start. It's going to be Garrett Crochet versus Mad Max Scherzer, who is coming off an absolute stinker of a game versus Kansas City. He pitched 0.2 innings, gave up 7 runs on 7 hits. That was the game where KC put up 20 runs overall on Toronto, wow. Which, you know, hopefully we can follow suit. How do you guys feel about this matchup?
I feel good. I feel good going into tomorrow. You know, maybe a little passing of the torch from Max to Crochet, you know, the biggest big strikeout guys. And, you know, I used to love watching Max pitch, and, you know, now I love watching Garrett pitch. And I think, you know, I think he's going to prove that he's the type of guy that can be your horse, can, you know, be a bulldog when you need him to, and be the ace of the team and be what you brought him here to be. And that's the tomorrow proves it.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. Two big game pitchers. Like, I know Max has had a up and down year in Toronto. He got lit up his last outing, but he is a big time, big game pitcher. Yeah. And this is a big game for Toronto, as we talked about earlier. Like, their division lead is slipping away. So they're putting the ball in Max's hand, hoping that he can save their season. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun one. Two big game pitchers going right up against each other. Scherzer has a bad career numbers against the Red Sox. I think he's under 500, and he's got an ERA like close to 6. But he's also been pitching forever, so I don't know how many of the current Red Sox he's actually faced. I'm sure there's some crossover. Like, he's definitely faced Bregman before, but I'm not even sure if he's faced Duran. I don't know if he's faced Rafaela. Like, I think some of the younger guys, they probably haven't seen him. So it might be a slow-moving game, might be a pitcher's duel for a little bit. But I think once the Red Sox get to that second, third time through the order, if Scherzer is still in the game, I think they'll start to break out the offense a little bit. And I think Crochet is going to step up in a big way and just, you know, for lack of a better word, just put his nuts on the table and say, no, we're not missing the playoffs. Like, I'm going to strike out 12, 13 guys. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm going to do my job. So I feel good. I think the Red Sox will win tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, Kershaw was the pitcher of the era. But I think if you needed one game to win, Max might be the guy of that era that you pick.
I agree. Yep, I agree.
Yeah, and, you know, looking at his splits, he's a little bit better at home than on the road this year, too. So we might be catching him in his element. Regardless, hopefully we can challenge him. I agree with your guys' assessment of him. I'm thinking with Crochet, you know, the big question is going to be the long ball. You know, Crochet has been struggling with home runs lately. I'm going to guess that he is going to give up one tomorrow and then settle down. That'll be my optimistic, you know, forecast is maybe George Springer goes out there and gets back what he feels was stolen from him today, you know, with that with that hit down the line. But no, I agree. I mean, you've got to feel good about this. Your ace is on the bump. You're coming off a solid offensive performance. And hopefully, you know, Crochet can give you 7 good innings. Hopefully the bats can get it done. And you can take a series against a very good Blue Jays team. Now, just glancing at Thursday, Brian Bello versus Shane Bieber. Do you guys feel like a sweep is in the cards, or are you not as confident in that matchup as the previous?
It's hard to be as confident in that one. You know, Bieber's been pitching great since he got there.
Yeah, Bieber's looked real good since going there, and Bello has had a rough September. Not sure exactly what's going on with him, so it's going to be – he's going to need a bounce-back performance, but I just – I want them to sweep Toronto, but man, that feels like a tall task. So if I have them win tomorrow, I just feel like Bieber is going to shut them down on Thursday, and maybe Bello struggles a little bit more. I don't know, but Thursday I'm not as confident in. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd agree completely. You know, I think it's a game that could go either way. I think that, you know, we're very privileged at this point after tonight to even say that a sweep is possible, you know, because coming into this series, I wasn't very confident. To be poised to even win the series. I mean, coming into this, I'll be completely honest, I was thinking to myself, all right, Crochet versus Scherzer, I like that. The other two games, not so much. Giolito didn't look great tonight, but he got the job done at the end of the day. Hopefully, Bello can do the same thing. And maybe, just maybe, oh, you know what would be the worst? We may very well do so well this series that we move the Yankees into first place.
I know.
That would be the biggest double-edged sword, where it's like, oh, I want the Red Sox to do well, but I want the Yankees to get a wild card. Oh, man, you know.
Yep.
It'll be fun to watch, though, you know. And then, with you know, all said and done, I mean, 5 games left. It's been a tremendously long season, tremendously fun season. Hopefully, we can end on the right note. Any closing thoughts, guys?
Go Sox.
My best friend is a born and raised Cleveland fan, so this week is really going to test the bonds of our friendship.
I love it.
Because if the Red Sox screw this up and Cleveland takes our wild card spot, him and I are going to have some words. So, but that's, like you said, that's, you know, people that aren't going through it, you don't get it. It's just like those of us that are going through it with our teams, it's like, yeah, just living and breathing it every day for the next week.
Yep. You know, really, I think the best thing – that Cleveland could do maybe is just beating Detroit into the ground, you know, and then who knows, maybe we could help out Cleveland right in that final series and say, don't worry. You could say to your friend, don't worry, we got your back, you know, and hopefully we deliver on that. I know a few times me and my dad, well, because we're fans of different teams, we'll text back and forth. Oh, you know, I'm playing so-and-so. We're going to get them for you. And then, you know, you get a text 3 hours later that goes, all right, we didn't get them for you. But yeah, really good, you know, win tonight. Hopefully it's a forecast for something good. Thank you guys so much for joining me. Thank you everyone for watching, listening, and chatting. We do appreciate it. My name has been Nick, joined by Jason and Doug. We've been the Bastards of Boston. We'll see you tomorrow, hopefully after another win. Go Red Sox. Take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.